Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. This is Lon Woodbury, an independent educational consultant located in North Idaho. And today we're going to talk about what it takes to be an educational consultant. And I have the phone Sean Rose. Now, Sean is a educational consultant, fairly new in the business. And I'm going to ask him what he's doing and what he needs to do in order to be an independent educational consultant. So, Sean, good afternoon. Glad to have you here. Incidentally, it's January 15th, but glad to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you, Lon. Thank you. I appreciate you taking the time to have me on.
Okay.
As you mentioned, my name is Sean Rose. I am the lead consultant and founder of Breakthrough Educational Consultation, which is an independent consultation firm in the Boston, Massachusetts region. And I appreciate the fact that we're talking a little bit about what it takes to become an educational consultant, because there is no real blueprint for it. It's not something that you can take a class for. Or it's not something that you can necessarily go to a training for. It comes from experience and advocating for children and families and really having a good sense of what programs offer in terms of services, things like that.
Okay, well, let's narrow that down a little bit, because there's all kinds of different educational consultants, and
sure.
And this is a specialized, when you use independent educational consultant, that means you're working in the private sector for the most part, and it's independent.
Right.
And my specialty is what's sort of called the therapeutic areas, schools for kids with behavioral, attitude, emotional, or mental health issues and problems. And you specialize in that area too, don't you?
Absolutely. You know, the thing for me that occurred was I was running a residential treatment center in central Massachusetts for kids who suffer with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and other mood disorders, organic orders and disorders and such. And after leaving there, I got into a different role and really wanted to sort of remain in the IECA and sort of NATSAP world that I had been accustomed to for a few years. I started connecting with some families who were friends of the families that I had done some pretty good work with and was doing some pro bono work and sort of offering them support, guidance, and advocacy around different programming. Having been, you know, running that RTC, I had seen quite a few programs around the country, having to interview kids and so on. And so as a result of that, I decided to sort of jump in and start my own ed consultant firm. My background in running that RTC was to work at the trauma center out of Boston as an adjunct training faculty, where I learned some sort of cutting-edge clinical philosophies and such to sort of partner with my master's in education. So having worked in the therapeutic boarding schools, having run RTCs, having developed programming, I thought it would be very appropriate for me to be the type of person to advocate for families who needed direction.
Okay, so what steps did you take? You decided now you want to be an educational consultant and get on that side of the equation. What steps did you take once you made that decision?
So the first thing that I did was I signed up for IECA's Summer Training Institute. And it's a week-long program that happens down in Pennsylvania. And they give you a sort of induction into what it's like to be a therapeutic consultant or an independent ed consultant. My side, obviously, was the therapeutic side. And you go through that, and they really give you a good sort of roadmap for how to develop a business, create a business plan, and sort of give you a lot of statistics and evidence to sort of help you get started in your practice. Once you get that done, you sort of apply to officially become an independent ed consultant through IECA. And once you do that, it sort of sets the tone for you to sort of move forward with your starting your firm.
Well, the first question I think I have is that how do people learn about you? How do they hear about you?
So the thing for me was luckily my name had been floating around the business for a little while, so I was able to make a lot of connections to the people that I've had good relationships in the past, and reaching out to them and letting them know that I was sort of on the other side of the aisle now and looking to become a consultant and, you know, really partnering with them, and then really just getting out and getting the experiences of touring a bunch of different programs and meeting a bunch of new people and introducing yourself to them and really getting a sense of sort of how their programs work, what clinical services they have, what their niches are, but more importantly, you know, to get a sense of the relationships that you could be, sort of bring to a family and their, you know, son or daughter, and really finding the right matches.
Mm-hmm. I think well, my job let's talk about the getting to know and then get into the right match, because that's what it's all about. It sounds like you did quite a bit of traveling.
I have been all over the country since we've opened up our practice in November. I've been out to Montana, Arizona, and just really hitting the road. I think it's important that you see as many programs as possible and meet as many people as possible, because that's how are you able to successfully match a family, you know, with their son or daughter in a placement if you don't know the people who you're referring to.
Let's talk about this matching, because I think a lot of people don't really understand the importance of it. A lot of the parents, because I've had parents call me and say, well, I ran across this place for troubled teens, and I have a troubled teen, so is it a good place? And that's about as far as they go into it, and they're radically different. So talk about the importance of the match and what you do to determine a match when you do have a client and a parents call you and they're wanting you to help place their kid.
So I think you make a good point in that, you know, the parents can find anything on the internet, and you know they can do the same searches as you know anyone else could, to some degree. And I think what we're talking about matches is, so you know, if you have a kid whose personality is that he is, you know, big into the outdoors, and that's going to help him to sort of regulate himself, to put him into a position to be able to access sort of treatment and positive coping skills, you would want to put him in an environment where he would be successful in the outdoors and things like that. And so I think the matches goes beyond just, you know, troubled teen versus troubled teen, and there are nuances to it. There are certain therapists who I think would be in certain programs who I think would be magnificent for kids, for a certain profile of kid, and then there are certain therapists that I don't think would be a good match for certain profiles of kids. That doesn't mean that those therapists are bad, and it doesn't mean the ones that are a good match are the greatest in the world. It just means that there's a level of sort of detail that you need to sort of look at when determining a placement for a kid, because if they're not going to be successful in that environment, then it's a failure for everyone.
And yeah, I think that's really important. That the way I've always explained it is that the kids, the strengths of the school matches the weaknesses of the kid, and that's sort of what you want to do. Another part of it, I think, is very much of an art, and it depends upon experience, because you can go only so far and say, well, this school is good for this thing, and this kid has these diagnoses, and this kid has these diagnoses. Yeah. So it's got to go a lot further than just what you can do in a middle matching.
For sure. You know, the thing for us that we really focus on is really, you know, the kids that come to us, it's really trying to identify, like, you know, programs that are going to help them to sort of attach really well, and programs that are going to help them to sort of regulate themselves very well, and programs that are going to really help to sort of shift the identities of the kids that we're referring in a positive way. And so for us, we're looking for, like, even more detail. We're looking beyond the clinical realm of what's going on. We're looking beyond what's being said on the website. We're looking for true matches to a treatment plan. You know, we're looking at the treatment plan and saying, can you execute all these things in this treatment plan to help this kid be successful, and as successful as they can possibly be? And so for us, you know, it's really imperative that we're out looking at programs and seeing programs and meeting all the people, because we're just not looking at the surface and the symptoms of what's happening with a diagnosis and behavior and such. We're looking beyond it into, like, identity work and body sort of work that helps to create regulation and things like that.
Okay, well, the time went fast. We've ran out of time. This is Lon Woodbury, an independent educational consultant. And on the Woodbury Report, we've been talking with Sean Rose. He's a new independent educational consultant working with therapeutic placements from the Boston area. Well, thank you very much, and good luck, Sean.
Thank you. Take care, Lon.
Yeah, you too.